Speeches. Literary and Social by Charles Dickens. Speech. Edinburgh, June 25, 1841. At a public dinner, given in honor of Mr. Dickens, and presided over by the late Professor Wilson, the chairman having proposed his health in a long and eloquent speech, Mr. Dickens returned thanks as follows.
If I felt your warm and generous welcome less, I should be better able to thank you. If I could have listened as you have listened to the glowing language of your distinguished chairman, and if I could have heard as you heard the thoughts that breathe and words that burn, which he has uttered, it would have gone hard, but I should have caught some portion of his enthusiasm, and kindled at his example. But every word which fell from his lips, and every demonstration of sympathy and approbation with which he received his eloquent expressions, renders me unable to respond to his kindness, and leaves me at last all heart and no lips, yearning to respond as I would do to your cordial greeting, possessing, heaven knows, the will, and desiring only to find the way. The way to your good opinion, favor, and support, has been to me very pleasing, a path strewn with flowers and cheered with sunshine. I feel as if I stood amongst old friends, whom I had intimately known and highly valued. I feel as if the debts of the fictitious creatures, in which you have been kind enough to express an interest, had endeared us to each other as real afflictions deepened friendships in actual life. I feel as if they had been real persons, whose fortunes we had pursued together in inseparable connection, and that I had never known them apart from you. It is a difficult thing for a man to speak of himself, or of his works. But perhaps on this occasion I may, without impropriety, venture to say a word on the spirit in which mine were conceived. I felt an earnest and humble desire, and shall do till I die, to increase the stock of harmless cheerfulness. I felt that the world was not utterly to be despised, that it was worthy of living in for many reasons. I was anxious to find, as the professor has said, if I could, in evil things, that soul of goodness which the Creator has put in them. I was anxious to show that virtue may be found in the byways of the world, that it is not incompatible with poverty, and even with rags, and to keep steadily through life the motto, expressed in the burning words of your northern poet, the rank is but the guinea stamp, the man's the gout for a that. And in following this track, where could I have better assurance that I was right, or where could I have stronger assurance to cheer me on than in your kindness on this to me memorable night? I am anxious and glad to have an opportunity of saying a word in reference to one incident in which I am happy to know you were interested, and still more happy to know, though it may sound paradoxical, that you were disappointed, I mean the death of the little heroine. When I first conceived the idea of conducting that simple story to its termination, I determined rigidly to adhere to it, and never to forsake the end I had in view. Not untried in the school of affliction, in the death of those we love, I thought what a good thing it would be if in my little work of pleasant amusement I could substitute a garland of fresh flowers for the sculptured horrors which disgrace the tomb. If I have put into my book anything which can fill the young mind with better thoughts of death, or soften the grief of older hearts, if I have written one word which can afford pleasure or consolation to old or young in time of trial, I shall consider it as something achieved, something which I shall be glad to look back upon in after life. Therefore I kept to my purpose, notwithstanding that towards the conclusion of the story, I daily received letters of remonstrance, especially from the ladies. God bless them for their tender mercies. The professor was quite right when he said that I had not reached to an adequate delineation of their virtues, and I fear that I must go on blotting their characters in endeavoring to reach the ideal in my mind. These letters were, however, combined with others from the sterner sex, and some of them were not altogether free from personal invective. But, notwithstanding, I kept to my purpose, and I am happy to know that many of those who at first condemned me are now foremost in their approbation. If I have made a mistake in detaining you with this little incident, I do not regret having done so. for your kindness has given me such a confidence in you, that the fault is yours and not mine. I come once more to thank you, and here I am in a difficulty again. The distinction you have conferred upon me is one which I never hoped for, and of which I never dared to dream. That it is one which I shall never forget, and that while I live I shall be proud of its remembrance, you must well know. I believe I shall never hear the name of this capital of Scotland without a thrill of gratitude and pleasure. I shall love, while I have life, her people, her hills, and her houses, and even the very stones of her streets. And if in the future works which may lie before me, you should discern, God grant you may, a brighter spirit and a clearer wit, I pray you to refer it back to this night, and point to that as a Scottish passage forevermore. I thank you again and again, with the energy of a thousand thanks in each one, and I drink to you with a heart as full as my glass, and far easier emptied, I do assure you. Later in the evening, in proposing the health of Professor Wilson, Mr. Dickens said, I have the honor to be entrusted with a toast, the very mention of which will recommend itself to you, I know, as one possessing no ordinary claims to your sympathy and approbation, and the proposing of which is as congenial to my wishes and feelings as its acceptance must be to yours. It is the health of our chairman, and coupled with his name I have to propose the literature of Scotland, a literature which he has done much to render famous through the world, and of which he has been for many years, as I hope and believe he will be for many more, a most brilliant and distinguished ornament. Who can revert to the literature of the land of Scott, and of Burns, without having directly in his mind, as inseparable from the subject and foremost in the picture, that old man of might, with his lion heart and sceptered crutch, Christopher North? I am glad to remember the time when I believed him to be a real, actual, veritable old gentleman, that might be seen any day hobbling along the high street with the most brilliant eye, but that is no fiction, and the greyest hair in all the world who wrote, not because he cared to write, not because he cared for the wonder and admiration of his fellow men, but who wrote, because he could not help it, because there was always springing up in his mind a clear and sparkling stream of poetry which must have vent, and like the glittering fountain in the fairy tale, draw what you might, was ever at the full, and never languished even by a single drop or bubble. I had so figured him in my mind, and when I saw the professor 2 days ago, striding along the Parliament House, I was disposed to take it as a personal offense. I was vexed to see him look so hearty. I drooped to see 20 Christophers in one. I began to think that Scottish life was all light and no shadows, and I began to doubt that beautiful book to which I have turned again and again, always to find new beauties and fresh sources of interest. In proposing the memory of the late Sir David Wilkie, Mr. Dickens said, less fortunate than the two gentlemen who have preceded me, it is confided to me to mention a name which cannot be pronounced without sorrow, a name in which Scotland had a great triumph, and which England delighted to honor. One of the gifted of the earth has passed away, as it were, yesterday. One who was devoted to his art, and his art was nature, I mean David Wilkie. One, he was one who made the cottage hearth a graceful thing, of whom it might truly be said, that he found books in the running brooks, and who has left in all he did some breathing of the air which stirs the heather. But however desirous to enlarge on his genius as an artist, I would rather speak of him now as a friend who has gone from amongst us. There is his deserted studio, the empty easel lying idly by the unfinished picture with its face turned to the wall, and there is that bereaved sister, who loved him with an affection which death cannot quench. He has left a name in fame clear as the bright sky. He has filled our minds with memories pure as the blue waves which roll over him. Let us hope that she who more than all others mourns his loss may learn to reflect that he died in the fullness of his time, before age or sickness had dimmed his powers, and that she may yet associate with feelings as calm and pleasant as we do now the memory of Wilkie. Speech, January, 1842. In presenting Captain Hewitt, of the Britannia, 2. With a service of plate on behalf of the passengers, Mr. Dickens addressed him as follows. Captain Hewitt, I am very proud and happy to have been selected as the instrument of conveying to you the heartfelt thanks of my fellow passengers on board the ship entrusted to your charge, and of entreating your acceptance of this trifling present. The ingenious artists who work in silver do not always, I find, keep their promises, even in Boston. I regret that, instead of two goblets, which there should be here, there is, at present, only one. The deficiency, however, will soon be supplied, and, when it is, our little testimonial will be, so far, complete. You are a sailor, Captain Hewitt, in the truest sense of the word, and the devoted admiration of the ladies, God bless them, is a sailor's first boast. I need not enlarge upon the honor they have done you, I am sure, by their presence here. Judging of you by myself, I am certain that the recollection of their beautiful faces will cheer your lonely vigils upon the ocean for a long time to come. In all time to come, and in all your voyages upon the sea, I hope you will have a thought for those who wish to live in your memory by the help of these trifles, as they will often connect you with the pleasure of those homes, and firesides from which they once wandered, and which, but for you, they might never have regained, so they trust, that you will sometimes associate them with your hours of festive enjoyment, and, that, when you drink from these cups, you will feel, that the draught is commended to your lips by friends whose best wishes you have, and who earnestly and truly hope for your success, happiness, and prosperity, in all the undertakings of your life. Speech. February 1842.
At dinner given to Mr. Dickens by the young men of Boston, the company consisted of about 200, among whom were George Bancroft Washington Allston, and Oliver Wendell Holmes. The toast of health, happiness, and a hearty welcome to Charles Dickens, having been proposed by the chairman, Mr. Quincy, and received with great applause, Mr. Dickens responded with the following address.
Gentlemen, if you had given this splendid entertainment to anyone else in the whole wide world, if I were tonight to exult in the triumph of my dearest friend, if I stood here upon my defense, to repel any unjust attack, to appeal as a stranger to your generosity and kindness as the freest people on the earth I could, putting some restraint upon myself, stand among you as self-possessed and unmoved as I should be alone in my own room in England. But when I have the echoes of your cordial greeting ringing in my ears, when I see your kind faces beaming a welcome so warm and earnest as never man had I feel, it is my nature, so vanquished and subdued, that I have hardly fortitude enough to thank you. If your president, instead of pouring forth that delightful mixture of humor and pathos which you have just heard, had been but a caustic, ill-natured man, if he had only been a dull one, if I could only have doubted, or distrusted him or you, I should have had my wits at my fingers' ends, and, using them, could have held you at arm's length. But you have given me no such opportunity. You take advantage of me in the tenderest point. You give me no chance of playing at company, or holding you at a distance, but flock about me like a host of brothers, and make this place like home. Indeed, gentlemen, indeed, if it be natural and allowable for each of us, on his own hearth, to express his thoughts in the most homely fashion, and to appear in his plainest garb, I have a fair claim upon you to let me do so tonight, for you have made my home and Aladdin's palace. You fold so tenderly within your breasts that common household lamp in which my feeble fire is all enshrined, and at which my flickering torch is lighted up, that straight my household gods take wing, and are transported there. And whereas it is written of that fairy structure, that it never moved without two shocks, one when it rose, and one when it settled down, I can say of mine that, however sharp a tug it took to pluck it from its native ground, it struck at once an easy, and a deep and lasting root into this soil, and loved it as its own. I can say more of it, and say with truth, that long before it moved, or had a chance of moving, its master perhaps from some secret sympathy between its timbers, and a certain stately tree, that has its being hereabout, and spreads its broad branches far and wide, dreamed by day and night, for years, of setting foot upon this shore, and breathing this pure air. And, trust me, gentlemen, that, if I had wandered here, unknowing and unknown, I would, if I know my own heart, have come with all my sympathies clustering as richly about this land and people, with all my sense of justice as keenly alive to their high claims on every man who loves God's image, with all my energies as fully bent on judging for myself, and speaking out, and telling in my sphere the truth, as I do now, when you rain down your welcomes on my head. Our president has alluded to those writings which have been my occupation for some years past, and you have received his allusions in a manner which assures me, if I needed any such assurance, that we are old friends in the spirit, and have been in close communion for a long time. It is not easy for a man to speak of his own books. I dare say that few persons have been more interested in mine than I, and if it be a general principle in nature, that a lover's love is blind, and that a mother's love is blind, I believe it may be said of an author's attachment to the creatures of his own imagination, that it is a perfect model of constancy and devotion, and is the blindest of all. But the objects and purposes I have had in view are very plain and simple, and may be easily told. I have always had, and always shall have, an earnest and true desire to contribute, as far as in me lies, to the common stock of healthful cheerfulness and enjoyment. I have always had, and always shall have, an invincible repugnance to that molite philosophy which loves the darkness, and winks and scowls in the light. I believe that virtue shows quite as well in rags and patches, as she does in purple and fine linen. I believe that she and every beautiful object in external nature claims some sympathy in the breast of the poorest man who breaks his scanty loaf of daily bread. I believe that she goes barefoot as well as shod. I believe that she dwells rather oftener in alleys and by ways than she does in courts and palaces, and that it is good, and pleasant, and profitable to track her out, and follow her. I believe that to lay one's hand upon some of those rejected ones whom the world has too long forgotten, and too often misused, and to say to the proudest and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.